You're listening to the Full and Thriving Podcast, a place where courageous women come to break free from food obsession, heal their relationship with their body, and strive to live a life that's present, lighthearted, and meaningful. If you're listening, my wish is that this podcast serves as a catalyst that inspires you to nourish your body, nurture your mind, and energize your spirit. I'm your host, Meg McCabe, a certified life coach and eating disorder recovery coach with a PhD in having a good time. Just kidding about that last part. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, Marcella. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for being here. We're so happy to have you here today. I'm a big admirer of the work you do, and I'm just really appreciative to have you here.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And I am so excited to be here with you to talk about two of my favorite topics, IFS and eating disorders.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait. This is something that I've been wanting to have an episode on for so long, and I think you're the perfect person to have this conversation with. So before we dive into your two favorite topics, I'd love to hear about your personal journey to becoming a therapist who focuses on eating disorders and also what might have piqued your interest in IFS.
Yeah, well, I'd love to share a little bit more about that. So after I graduated from college, I worked in marketing and Silicon Valley in the tech industry for about 10 years, and then started having a family and took a little hiatus to raise my kids. And when they were entering middle school, I decided to go back to school and become a therapist myself after doing so, my own healing work in therapy. And like so many people who treat eating disorders, I knew I wanted to be in this field because of my personal experience and my own healing. And so after graduate school, when I was an intern, my supervisor was an IFS therapist, and she helped me begin to learn the model and conceptualize what was happening with my clients from an IFS framework. And what that meant was working with people to understand the protective nature of their eating disorder, as opposed to just getting rid of symptoms or containing symptoms. And I then went on to work at a treatment program, and it was really focused on teaching all these skills like CBT. And I saw the need for something more than skills to help clients heal. The skills that were taught in treatment were great, but they only took clients so far in their healing. And they didn't address the underlying issues the way that my previous work had with IFS. So I began to do a deeper dive in learning more about IFS and becoming more skilled in how to use it with my clients. And even though from time to time I'll integrate other modalities, IFS is the overarching approach that guides my work. And I became certified in 2018 as an IFS therapist. And I've also done my own inner healing with an IFS therapist, which has been truly transformational in my life. And I've worked with clients struggling with disordered eating and eating disorders and body image issues for more than a decade now. And as I said, it's just an honor to be here today to talk about IFS and disordered eating from my experience.
Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing your journey. I love how you found this and discovered this and saw a need. Could you please explain what exactly IFS is and how it works? Because I hear so many people talking about this, and I'm sure people with eating disorders have heard this thrown around, but they probably don't know exactly what it is.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to explain it. And if I get a little too technical here, feel free to edit it out. So IFS was started by a family systems therapist named Richard Schwartz. And he developed the model about 40 years ago. And he really learned the model from his clients, including clients that he worked with at an eating disorder treatment program. He was working with some clients who were struggling with bulimia. And these clients would talk about these parts of themselves. And so he started getting really curious. And so sometimes he'd ask me, what part is that? And they would say, oh, that's not a part. That's myself. And I'm talking a little bit more about this concept of our self energy shortly. And so he learned how to help these clients unblend from their parts and relate to them from their core self, which turns out to be really healing. And so what Dick did is he really focused on the relationship amongst these parts and noticed that there was these patterns and that the way they were organized in every human. So there are three types of parts. There's two types of protective parts, and these parts are trying to protect us from being hurt. And these are parts that are more manager-like that prevent pain. And then there are parts that are more firefighter-like to put out the pain right away. And then there's a third part, which are these wounded parts, which are called exiles. And they're often younger, more vulnerable parts of ourselves. And they carry wounds and burdens from the past, you know, the hurt and the trauma. And they can show up as memories or sensations, emotions or beliefs. And they carry shame and unmet needs and lack of connection, being alone. And they're often stuck in the past in our implicit memory. And one thing to keep in mind, that these parts aren't their wounds, right? These exiles aren't their wounds. They're often the most creative, sensitive, loving, playful parts of ourselves without their burdens. Mm-hmm. So getting back to the protective parts, right? So when we have these wounds, which we all get in life, right? No one is immune from being hurt in life. We can have these protective parts. We have parts that are unburdened that help us, right? We have managers that, you know, had me show up to your podcast today and prepare as much as possible and get things done in our lives. But sometimes these parts, because there's a wound underneath, become burdened. They get more extreme. And how that might show up in a client that's struggling with disordered eating or an eating disorder is like being perfect or trying to control everything or people pleasing or really wanting to be liked or caretaking others, avoiding conflict, obsessing and wanting to look good. So those are some of the managers. They do all these things to prevent pain. And then these firefighters, right, are parts that when these wounds get activated, they want to put out the pain. And so they kind of are more reactive in the way that they respond. And these parts can be parts that like binge eat or purge or cut. They can also be suicidal. They can abuse substances, numb out, dissociate. And not all these firefighters are a burden, right? We can also have a firefighter that just wants us to have fun and that's spontaneous. And yeah, so these parts aren't bad, right? That's one of the assumptions of the model. And let me just back up here.
Yeah.
So talking about the assumptions of the model. So the first assumption is this assumption of multiplicity, that we all have these multiple parts. It doesn't mean we have multiple personality disorder, but they're like little sub-personalities within. And that's just the natural state of our mind. You know, some people question this. And, you know, if you're trying to make a decision and you're torn about what to do, often we talk in parts language. Well, part of me thinks this and another part of me thinks that, right? And, you know, an exercise that I might do with clients is like, okay, well, let's just put each part in a hand and notice that there's a you here, right? That there's this concept of self. And that this is like this undamaged core of who we are. And it can be the leader of an internal system, of our own internal system. And it's the healing agent within therapy. And it has these qualities of compassion and curiosity and being calm and connected and having confidence and courage and creativity and clarity. And so that's the second assumption. And the next one is what I touched on is that there are no bad parts. So even though parts can be wounded and burdened and forced into extreme roles or trapped in time and trauma, they can also be unburdened and healed and released from those extreme roles. And another assumption is that these parts operate in a system. So they're not operating in isolation. So they work in clusters or they can be polarized with one another, right? Like in eating disorder treatment, like a part of a client really wants to get better and a part of a client is terrified, right? Or doesn't want to give up, you know, some behaviors that have really served a purpose. And so, you know, there can be a polarization and things can feel stuck. Mm-hmm. And then there can be these webs of relationships of parts. And so our goal is not to get rid of parts, but to really befriend them and help them so they can heal and return to their natural state with their valuable qualities. And so this model of therapy has been gaining widespread popularity in the field of mental health because it offers an effective evidence-based alternative to talk therapy.
Very good. Wow. So what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, this modality is really about like identifying the competing parts within yourself and then developing relationship with those parts coming from your core self, right? So it's like how your core, authentic, true self relates to these parts that are protective or wounded, et cetera.
Exactly.
And then that relationship is what starts to heal the person because you're starting to interact with these parts more compassionately and coming from more understanding and empathy. Would you say that's correct?
That is correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So IFS is a relationship building model, right? As a therapist, I'm helping my clients build a relationship between themselves and their parts because at the end of the day, right, they're only with me an hour a week, but they're living their lives and being able to have access to your self energy and be able to relate to your parts on a day-to-day basis is really important.
Very cool. Okay, so when a person has an eating disorder, what are the common patterns or that you can observe in these types of parts?
So what's fascinating is so many clients who struggle with disordered eating have a lot of polarizations. And so they might have a part that wants to get rid of the binge eating, right? And then a part that doesn't want to get rid of restricting, or a part that binge eats and a part that restricts. What I see is, yes, there's parts all on board. The managers are all on board. Let's get rid of binge eating. It's bad. But let's not get rid of restricting because it's socially acceptable in our diet culture. So other patterns might be parts that really want to comply with therapy and parts that want to rebel and just do what they want to do. There could be parts that really want to care for your body, right? They might start to get some feedback from doctors that they're having some negative consequences from their behaviors and they really want to take care of their body. And then parts that just want to ignore and neglect their body, right? Their body isn't a safe place. So there can be these patterns that I notice with clients. Those are just some of them, right? We also have the parts that are really controlling and perfectionistic, and then parts that it just feels things are just chaotic. And sometimes it's not only with eating. So I've also seen, you know, part client systems, you know, they might have highly rigid managers around food and body and exercise. And their firefighters might be more around like drinking or spending money. You know, they have these chaotic relationships with some of these other kind of behaviors. So it doesn't always end up being just about the food.
Wow. I'm really intrigued by this concept of polarization because it's so true. I mean, from my experience with an eating disorder, it's like you have two separate brains, right? You have the brain that wants to use behaviors and stay sick for all these reasons, and it all serves a purpose. And then you have the part of you that wants to get better and wants to get, you know, break free and have a relaxed relationship with food. And that's why it's so conflicting. And I know in eating disorder treatment, there's so much conversation around like the healthy self and the eating disorder self. And I feel like that's a simplified version of almost like parts work.
Absolutely. And what if we could get to know both of those parts and really get curious about, especially about that part that doesn't want to give things up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's scared, and really get to know that from a place of compassion without an agenda of needing to change it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. Okay. So how would you say IFS is different from other therapeutic approaches out there when it comes to eating disorders?
Yeah. So I would say that one thing about the model is it recognizes that these extreme behaviors, you know, including restricting or binge eating, and binge eating can also be, you know, more physical. It's triggered by restricting, right? Or purging or overexercise. they're fueled by psychological burdens. And these burdens can be caused by not only trauma and attachment wounds and boundary violations and devaluing painful experiences that we have individually, but they can also be caused by cultural burdens of living in a fat-phobic diet culture, mm-hmm. right? And in this model, we're really engaging our curiosity as we seek to understand how protective parts are trying to help and what they are afraid would happen if they were to relax. And when we can really bring compassion to these protective parts and they feel understood and appreciated, they begin to show us when they got started and what was happening to the younger, more vulnerable parts at that time. And from there, we're able to help these parts unburden the pain and beliefs that they're holding in order to help them heal. And as we were saying, you know, in IFS, we listen to and we really get in relationship to these parts. We're not trying to control them, which is the opposite of what most standard eating disorder care is about, right? And it can feel very coercive to a client's system, right? When we're telling clients what to do. And so what this model provides is a framework for collaborative, healthy relationship and secure attachment between the client and their parts, not a chaotic and unsafe relationship. And so from that place, clients then can go on to have healthy, authentic relationships in other areas of their life, which, as we know, is so important in our recovery, but also for our mental health, as for everyone, right? We need connection. We need relationships. And so this approach brings no judgment towards these parts, even if there are negative consequences from their behavior. And as a therapist, I can help unblend from my own parts that might be scared, like, oh my gosh, this client is, you know, really struggling. And so I can unblend from my own parts and my client can sense that I am truly welcoming all their parts, all their struggles, so that then they feel more comfortable to really discuss the hard stuff of what's really going on. And the model, what it does, it actually empowers the client to transform and reclaim these parts of themselves from a place of compassion and curiosity to restore harmony within. And as a therapist, I'm just a guide helping clients access their own internal wisdom and compassion, you know, their own self-energy. Mm-hmm. And when they don't have access to that, I lend them some of my self-energy.
Okay. So when you use the word unblending, what do you mean and what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And sometimes a part can take over. So sometimes we can be more self-led. And when we're self-led, like we can be aware of parts and speak for parts. And sometimes the part can take over, right? You think of like someone cutting you off on the road and suddenly you're angry and you're like saying bad words or whatever, right? That part has taken over and you're not in relationship to the part. The part is leading. So when we can unblend from the part, right? And ask it to give us a little space so we can be in relationship to it and be curious about it, mm-hmm. then it can start to tell us more about how it's trying to help us and what is afraid it would happen if it didn't do this job. And it can also provide important information, right? Like a part might be, as I said, like an emotion, like anger or any emotion, but they can also be physical sensations, right? Sometimes it's our body that has sensations that are from, you know, just natural physical sensations, hunger, fullness, you know, you stub your toe, it hurts. But sometimes, you know, the parts can show up in our body. And, you know, when we really start to listen, it's actually pretty fascinating. I've been doing a lot of work with somatic IFS and how parts will use the body and show up in the body. So that's been quite fascinating.
So would that be, would somatic IFS be like looking at someone's symptom, like maybe they consistently have pain in the neck or something, and then like trying to see what part's trying to express itself through that pain? Is that sort of what that looks like?
Yeah. Yeah. So somatic IFS is basically, you know, the IFS model, but it gives you some more tools, somatic tools to bring in. Maybe it's somatic awareness, you know, just placing your awareness on that pain in your neck, or maybe sending that pain a breath of your awareness that you're noticing it. Maybe that there's a touch that might feel soothing, or to let the part know that it's not alone. Often mm-hmm. parts, burden parts feel so alone. Yeah. So we can bring in these other tools. Maybe there's a movement, right? maybe, you know, that issue is in your neck is because you haven't been using your voice. And that's what the part is telling you, right? So there could be all.
Wow. It gets
what
deep.
Unfolds is, it is deep. It is deep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, you're sharing about what unblending is and all of this. And I'm really curious about how a person might be able to start to identify the different parts within themselves, or even how they might unblend something. So that might even be a better example is like, okay, say someone has this angry reaction every time their dietitian asks them to increase the meal plan. Like, how might someone start to unblend that and start to identify what parts are competing? How might you help someone do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And knowing that we all have parts and sometimes these parts take over, what I often will do is start to invite some self-energy. And that might be just taking a few slow, easy breaths so more of you can be here, right? Self-energy has this calm, connected presence. So when you start to feel a little bit of more of yourself being present, right? More grounded. And I'm not sure if I covered the aspects of self-energy, our curiosity, creativity, compassion, calmness, courage, confidence, clarity, connectedness. So when we begin to notice some of those qualities, in IFS, we have these six Fs for us to get to know these parts of ourselves. And so what I often encourage my clients is to focus inside and to notice what's there. And so you use the example of this reaction that happens when a dietitian is asking you to change something about your meal plan, right? And so, you know, is there a thought? Is there an emotion? Is there a physical sensation? Are there images? And so we start to find that in or around your body, and we just start to listen and we, you know, get curious about, okay, what's there? Where is it? And once we can locate it, then we put our attention on it and we focus on that area and, you know, letting it know that it's there. You know, we're here with it. We can sense it. And then we start to flesh it out. You know, we notice how it's feeling in the body. We notice if there are other thoughts or emotions emerging. We notice how far we are away from the part or how we think the part is, right? You know, is this a younger part of ourselves? So we start to flesh it out and we might ask it some questions. And then the one question that we do ask is, how do you feel towards this part? And this is where we check for that self-energy. So there might be, oh, I hate it when I do that, right? And so there's another part. And so we would work with that part that hates it first and, you know, acknowledge that does that make sense that you would hate it? Absolutely. Well, would that part, you know, be willing to step back? And if it is willing to give you more space, then you can go back to that part that has the reaction with the dietitian. But if not, we can spend more time. Like, there's no agenda. Like, we don't have an agenda, right? Whatever is showing up is what we work on. So maybe it's a critic and we just need to spend more time with this critic that hates that you're not doing all the things to get better, right? And then after we get into some self-energy, then we can work on befriending the part, you know, understanding what the part wants you to know, what its role is, how old it thinks you are. And often we then understand its fears about what is it afraid would happen if it stopped doing its job. And we can also ask, are there other parts concerned about this part that reacts? And would they be willing to trust you to work with it? So those are some questions, and that, you know, people can easily find those questions on, you know, if they read Dick Schwartz's book or even Googling IFS therapy, you know, the six Fs are out there. Often I'll have my clients also map their parts. So they'll be drawing out the part and writing information on a piece of paper. And it might include like the characteristics of the part, like it's big and it's fierce. And, you know, they might be even drawing some of that fierceness, but it's a way for them to collect information, but also externalize the part so they can be in relationship when they draw it out. And there's also like these, nowadays, there's this app, this new app called Center, which is amazing, that allows you to map the parts and even check how much self-energy you have. So there are tools out there to help clients start to understand their internal system.
That's really interesting. I'm actually remembering now, because I did see your presentation at the IADA conference, and I think you asked us to map out a part. right?
I did. Yeah.
I'm remembering this now. And I mapped out some legit stuff that I had no idea was related to this adult part of me. Like, there was connections to, like, middle school embarrassment and, like, being the worst one on the basketball team. You know, it was like all this self-judgment. And I just remember mapping it out, being like, wow, I didn't realize it was all behind this part that's, you know, I'm trying to heal as an adult. It was very interesting.
Isn't it fascinating?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's such an accessible way to connect to our parts, right? There's no, like, magic to it. It's really starting to listen. And when we can have access to ourselves, or even not, let the part blend. And sometimes I'll have clients let the part blend and have that part write what it's really angry about, or, you know, just so it can express itself. Yeah, it's a great model. And I'm so happy to hear that it was such an opener to a trailhead for you.
Yeah, it was really cool, just because, you know, I think it was a part related to self-doubt or something like that. And then I found myself drawing a basketball and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, how is this related to basketball? This is from, like, my middle school embarrassment days. And then it was just from the exercise. But it's funny to see, like, when you ask us to map out a part, the things that came up that I just started drawing.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy to hear that. It was rich.
I'm glad to hear it was rich for you. And so, everyone listening, I highly recommend you try mapping out a part. And I love that idea of checking out that app too. And also going through the, did you say six F's?
The six F's of IFS. Yeah.
Of IFS. So those are all really helpful pointers for folks to start exploring this at home. I'm really curious also, Marcella, if you have any examples or case studies of how IFS has been effectively helpful in supporting folks with eating disorders. Maybe it's from your personal practice too. I'm just curious if you have any.
I would say a client that comes to mind is someone who started seeing me about a year ago. And a couple of months ago, she showed up to session and she said, therapy isn't working. And we had been working on building a relationship with the part of herself that binge ate, because that was, you know, where she wanted to focus, because she wanted to get rid of her binge eating. But there was another part of herself that wanted to lose weight so she could find a boyfriend. And I knew that this polarization was going to take a while to shift because it didn't develop overnight. And so I reminded the client that although her goal was to stop binge eating, we also needed to work with this part that was restricting during the day and activated the binge eating at night, right? There was a part of it that she was physically hungry, but there was also the loneliness that was triggering the binge eating. Mm-hmm. And in working with that restricting part, we learned that she really wanted to find love and acceptance. And this part felt that the only way to do this was to be in a smaller body. And as we started to befriend this manager, it allowed us to work with the exiles underneath the polarization. Mm. And so this client continues to work with her parts, and her eating has shifted to be from, like, parts-led eating, right? Of following, you know, rigid food rules and then binge eating, to being more self-led and really tuning into her body and understanding what her body wants to eat. And she's also begun dating, and she hasn't changed her body. So, yeah.
Wow, that's such a good
thing. She's found love, yeah.
That's so nice. Yes, I can see how, like, really looking into that part that wants to hold on to restriction, you know, there's probably so much there, like you said, related to wanting to find love, wanting to be in a, quote, more socially acceptable body according to BS beauty standards. Or, you know, it's like, if you dive deeper, you can have compassion for that part that's hard to heal, right? The part that's not get rid of, but I guess heal. You said there were exiles that came up. What are examples of exiles? I'm still curious to hear more about those.
Yeah, in her case, there were a couple. There was a part of an exile that got bullied for her body when she was in school. And then also an exile related to comments that her father made about her body. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, and that where she really felt, you know, some rejection. And so we worked on compassionately witnessing those experiences and then releasing those burdens.
Okay. That's really interesting. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that example. I think that's really helpful for people to see sort of how IFS could work in treatment. Okay. So I'm also really curious, Marcella, about like trauma and IFS. So I'm wondering, how does IFS help individuals identify and work through the root causes or traumas that may have contributed to their eating disorder?
That is a great question, because IFS is a great model to empower clients to heal when their intuition has been violated or they had to ignore it in order to survive, which often happens in trauma. So children learn that they have to shut off their intuitive self in order to stay connected to, say, a parent in order to survive. And like, I have to listen to my parent over what feels right for me. And so in trauma, we cut off our connection to ourself. And trauma is like the separator of our self-connection. And so with IFS, we're able to bring the client back into access to their self-energy. And we're also trying to get their parts back into connection and into relationship with their self. And so we're healing the self-to-part relationship, which was severed as a result of trauma. And so the self-connection, right, is this intuitive wisdom that gets cut off in the service of surviving trauma. Mm-hmm. And so repairing trust in self-leadership is the primary corrective role of IFS therapy, like trusting yourself over the view or opinion of an authority figure is what happens when we start to heal. And when we can gain trust in our self-leadership and our intuition, we can start to honor ourselves over someone else's opinion, which is the opposite of what happens in trauma, right? And this doesn't mean that you don't take input from your parts, and it's not about being selfish, but it's about having access to that intuitive wisdom in the relationship, which is normally not allowed, especially in relational trauma. Mm. And so I really want people to know that healing from trauma, which is often underlying eating disorders, is possible. And I also want to say that, you know, I get this feedback a lot, is that many people will say, well, you know, I've done therapy before and it didn't work, or I didn't get the results that I really wanted. And I believe that what happens sometimes is we don't honor these protective parts of us and we just go for the trauma, right? Mm. And, you know, we can hang out with these protectors for a long, long time before they build enough trust in us and they're willing to reveal. So we don't want to bypass any of these protectors, and they have these fears. Like, they don't want to be overwhelmed. You know, what can happen is, you know, sometimes the protectors will even say, oh, it's okay to start to work on this stuff, but we'll get this backlash that happens because not everyone was on board, right? And, you know, maybe their behaviors get a little worse. And that's a sign for us to slow down. Let's really stay with working with these protectors until they're truly ready to go to the trauma. Yeah, and I just want to really emphasize that our parts make sense, right? They're there to help us with our survival, and they're not what they do. And it's important for us to heal what's underneath these extreme parts, because the behaviors are unlikely to change until their wounds and their pain underneath are healed. And IFS is a great framework that outlines a way to work with these parts that are in a system that has disordered eating or an eating disorder, and a way of seeing and understanding these parts. And, you know, I've seen it many times that a protector will block any change until these young parts are healed. And so each part ultimately needs its own healing. And I love, there's this one quote by Frank Anderson, who's a lead IFS trainer. He says, trauma blocks love and love heals trauma. And with IFS, like our self-energy, right? It's love. Yeah. And so it's that loving presence that can really heal trauma.
Mm. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I think that's such a beautiful quote that we can end on today. Before I let you go, do you have any final words of wisdom you'd like to give to people who are maybe considering working you know, with an IFS therapist or incorporating that into their healing?
Yeah, I would say, you know, first of all, if this resonates with you, I would encourage folks to try and find an IFS therapist. There's also Dick Schwartz wrote a book, No Bad Parts, that I highly recommend. It's a great way to start to get familiar with the model. And there's some exercises in there to get familiar with your own system. I just want to encourage people to get help if they're struggling, because there's lots of help out there. And if IFS is not the right fit, you know, I hope that they find what is the right fit.
Thank you so much for that. And how can the listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your work and potentially to work with you?
Yeah, so I have actually run two group practices. One is called Kindful Body, and we're located in California, and we provide online eating disorder care and nutrition counseling. And we're an IFS-informed practice. My clinical director is an IFS therapist. Actually, she was trained by Dick many years ago. And yeah, we do trainings and consultation for all of our therapists on IFS. And so if you're in California, you know, we'd love to support you. I also have a group practice that's in six states. It's a multi-state group practice called the IFS Telehealth Collective. And I partnered with two lead trainers, and we're offering IFS true to the model in these six states, and it's also virtual care. And then lastly, I am starting to develop some courses and workshops that I'll be offering for people who aren't in these states who want to start to get to know their own system around food and their body. So those are coming, and probably I'm in the process. It's not live yet. Going to marcellacox.com to get access to those trainings in the future.
Well, we look forward to that and hearing all about those. And I'm so excited to hear about everything you're doing to bring IFS to folks with eating disorders. It sounds like a lot of great stuff happening. So Marcella, thank you so much for being on the show. It has been a true pleasure to have you here today.
Oh, the pleasure has been mine, Meg. This was great. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
All right, that concludes this week's episode of the Full and Thriving Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of the show. When you have a moment, please head on over to Instagram and follow my recovery coaching account at Meg_McCabe to stay up to date on everything I'm doing in recovery land. And if you're feeling extra inspired, please send me a direct message to let me know how this podcast has impacted your life. I'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.